Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. 12 o'clock hour. Jay Binkley, Stephen Serta producing the operation. Serta, instead of getting you a flashlight like I do everybody for Christmas, I'm going to get you Belichick's Sun Tzu Art of War. You should read that. Get inside the mind. One guy that's definitely inside the mind of the New England Patriots, the fantastic play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soucy. What's up, Bob?
Hey, Jay. How are you today?
I guarantee you, if I quizzed you on the Art of War, you would probably know that.
Well, I hope that's not what you're going to do. I don't want to prove you wrong.
Well, I know Belichick likes it. He talked to that NFL Network, man. I mean, he's great on that show, man. He really is. I mean, it's fantastic watching that and him showing that personality. But, Bob, here come the Chiefs again. I last talked to you in the playoffs. This is a big game in the NFL. It's a good measuring stick. And I think for both teams to kind of figure out, you know, who they are and which direction. Both teams have seen criticism. Believe it or not, Bob, people are upset with Pat Mahomes the last two games. Like, I know Brady is going through in New England. This is what happens in the NFL. It's ridiculous at times. I get it. Belichick versus Andy Reid. It doesn't get much more than that chess match these two guys have it with each other that might see each other again.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, last year we saw two thrilling games. Naturally, they were better for New England than they were for your listeners, predominantly your listeners. But this year we could very well see two games equally entertaining and compelling, and they could both go the Chiefs' way. And I think that for both teams, coming off last year's AFC Championship game with the Patriots, then shutting down the Rams and winning the Super Bowl, both beginning the season, expected, I think, to meet again at the end of the road in the AFC. It's been a trying season of sorts. Chiefs have had a lot of injuries, key skill people going down, offensive line, again, dealing with some things through the course of the year, and, of course, Patrick most notably. And for the Patriots, they've had a lot of injuries on offense, and some say limitations. And certainly there have been limitations offensively at skill groups over the course of the last couple of weeks. And they haven't been able to establish the running game, which they developed to help beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead last January. But they also have a defense that's been playing extremely well for most of the year, but it's had a couple of hiccups in recent weeks against Baltimore and then last Sunday versus Houston. And I think this week is a real barometer for this team. It's a very important game for a lot of different reasons. Seeding in the AFC, the Patriots are in a race that nobody thought they'd be in at this point for the AFC East lead with the Buffalo Bills, who they will meet in a couple of weeks. And you have this defense that was exposed a bit by the Ravens, and then last week had its troubles, albeit with a lot of guys under the weather, against the Houston Texans. And now they're going to go up against the Kansas City Chiefs offense. And as you noted, Patrick coming off a couple of sub-200-yard games, but capable of really being explosive at any time. It could very well be Sunday afternoon.
Talking to the voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soucy. And, Bob, let's talk about that, because we talked Belichick and Reid, which will be fantastic, but Brady versus Mahomes. You know, here's the greatest of all time in Tom Brady against someone with a lot of promise in Patrick Mahomes, the MVP. Now, you've seen great quarterbacks, and you watch one every week with Tom Brady. You've seen Lamar Jackson. You've seen Deshaun Watson. Where does Pat Mahomes fit in with that group?
I think he's honestly above the two younger quarterbacks in a lot of ways. I think it's been difficult to tell this year just watching the games on TV with the limited opportunity to have had, because even before he was injured in the Denver game, I recall it might have been Jacksonville early in the year. There was a game where it looked like he got hobbled a bit. You know, I think that when I look at Patrick, he's so talented. And what I see when I think about him, the highlight reel in my mind are throws going to the left sideline, going away, you know, throwing away from where his body is taking him and firing a dart down the middle of the field 40 yards. The throw that he made, for example, last year to Tyreek Hill at Gillette Stadium. I think of him in the AFC Championship game with that offense shut out in the first half and missing some throws that could have led to big plays, but also being under a lot of pressure and then coming out in the second half and basically driving the ball and scoring at will. So he's been tested, and he's been able to pass those tests on a big stage. And, you know, the fact that the Chiefs lost the AFC Championship game, I don't really think it fell on his shoulders. It was just a matter of, in an overtime setting, the Patriots got the ball first and were able to convert those third and longs in order to score the touchdown to keep him off the field in overtime. I look at Lamar Jackson as really a unique talent, and it's a different kind of offense that you face in Baltimore, and you've seen it as well this year with the tight ends, the fullback that was really instrumental in the game against the Patriots, a lot of the option blocking schemes and the option that they run and just the uniqueness of it. I called Service Academy football for years and understand the difficulties that defenses have trying to defend a triple option team at that level. But I think the Ravens are similar at the NFL level, and that you don't see what they do week to week, and it's hard to prepare for it and be ready in 1 week when they've been doing it all year long. And then I think with Watson, I think Watson is a talented quarterback. To me, he was at his best against the Patriots, honestly, when he was a rookie pre-knee injury. He was dynamic in the game in Foxborough as a rookie, and he should have led the Texans to a victory. It was a last-second touchdown pass for the Patriots that put them ahead, and then the Houston kind of mismanaged time on an opportunity late in that game to maybe get one last gasp to the end zone. But I think overall, I think Patrick Mahomes is as good as any young quarterback in the league, if not the best quarterback. And Brady certainly has the best body of work. He hasn't been playing like vintage Tom Brady of late. Some of that has to do with other factors, but they're right there.
Bob, let me ask you this. Okay, we know the Chiefs' offense can light up the scoreboard, and we know the Patriots' defense, the strength of that team. So it's strength against strength, and then it's the Patriots' offense that struggled at times against the Chiefs' defense that it struggled at times too, trying to find its identity. Which one is the better matchup in this game, Chiefs' offense versus that Pats' defense, or the Pats' offense versus the Chiefs' defense?
Well, Jay, I'd like to think it's the Patriots' offense against the Chiefs' defense, but this team has struggled to run the ball for a lot of different reasons this year. They lost their fullback, James Devlin. They lost center David Andrews, who I think is a guy that's undervalued, underappreciated in these parts. And left tackle Isaiah Wynn was lost for most of the year. Rob Gronkowski's no longer here. Dwayne Allen was a good blocker. He's no longer here. So they haven't been a consistent running team. They've gotten better the last couple of weeks. I'm very interested to see how they do this week. I think the Chiefs, it seems, have made gradual improvement on that side of the ball. Brendan Daly is a coach that I have a lot of respect for.
Brendan, do you like him? Yeah.
I do. I like Brendan personally, and you know, I thought he did a tremendous job here. You'll see some new guys in this Patriots defense, like Adam Butler and Dietrich Wise. And Butler, in particular, undrafted free agent, he's developed into a pretty good player. And Brendan Daly had a lot to do with him. And there's a number of other examples that I could point to during Brendan's tenure here where he helped a lot of these guys not only adapt to the NFL level and survive the NFL level, but begin to flourish on the NFL level. So I think that this is a real test for both, as you say. I'd like to think that the Patriots can find the answers. I think we're banking on history here in New England. Those of us who see it as a glass half full proposition. The Patriots have always figured it out. They did last year after they lost to the Steelers following a loss to the Dolphins late in December. But can they do it again? They have to do it before they face the Chiefs, because this is a game where they're going to have to score a lot of points.
The greatest dynasty I've ever seen, considering everybody's on the same playing field. It's unbelievable what they've been able to do. And, Bob, final question for you. Tom Brady's 42 years old. How many more years do you think he plays, and does he finish out his career in New England?
Yeah, Jay, that's been the topic that's been really a running conversation all year long, and it's heated up, especially in recent weeks, as he's shown his disfavor and displeasure with, one, the pieces around him, and two, the results that they're getting, even after a win, for example, a close win on the road in Philadelphia a few years ago. His contract situation is so unusual in that he has the last 2 years of his deal, which was signed before the year, voided, and the team can't franchise tag him. And with his recent sullen attitude and appearance publicly in press conference settings and in interviews. And a lot of people around here, especially on talk radio at our flagship in Boston, are in the mindset that, you know, this could be it for him. This may be it. This will be it, depending on who you talk to, for him in New England. And it may be it for him in football. I still see him playing beyond this season. I think the skills are still there to be a high-caliber quarterback at the NFL level for a couple of more years. But he's not enjoying this season. At least that's the appearance publicly, based on what he has said and what we've seen over the course of the last few weeks. A lot of that can change. I think if they get this team going in the next few weeks and the offense plays better, then that can change the outlook for Brady individually. And I think the tenor and the tone will change here as well and how we view him.
Adding another ring helps that as well. Bob Soucy is the voice of the New England Patriots. You're too kind with your time. I greatly appreciated it last year and this year as well. Bob, best of luck to you, my friend.
Hey, Jay, thanks so much. I'm looking forward to it. It would be a great game. It would be a fun game. As you mentioned, Andy Reid and Belichick. Can't get better than that when you talk about great offensive mind versus great defensive coach, but just great football coaches, period.
Looking forward to it. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thanks, Jay.
There you go, Bob Soucy right there, the voice of the New England Patriots. Now the voice of reason. Fanball.com's Paul Charchian, Fantasy Football Hall of Famer, best in the business, from the Patriots to Charge. Can't get a better segue than that. What's up, Charge?
Hey, voice of reason is that's a stretch. Anybody that's ever seen my preseason rankings and then tried to actually work with those, no, there's nothing reasonable about it.
Well, I've enjoyed this Patriots meltdown thing. It's kind of been a theme here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I was talking to Bob Soucy, he's the voice of the Patriots, you know, about Tom Brady, you know. How much has he got left in the tank? Can he go somewhere else and have, right. Is it the receivers? Is that the biggest hindrance? Is it him or the receivers? The chicken or the egg? I don't know.
Yeah, how about this? 20 years of Bill Belichick. Oh, God. You know, you can have a lot of success and not wake up and roll out of bed and going, you know what, I really want to see Hoodie again today. No, thanks. And by the way, we are talking about a 10-2 Patriots
team
right now, right? Yeah. So, you know, we can only be happy for, you know, for the whatever moderate lack of success I guess they're having. But, you know, they're still 10-2. They control their own destiny. They're still in a great spot. So, yeah. But
third world problems.
I can assure you, though, nationally, people are rooting for the Chiefs to knock them down a peg.
Third world problems. That's for sure. All right, Charge, let's talk some turkey. Over the past six game, Brian Fitzpatrick, third highest scoring fantasy quarterback. Boom, we were talking Sam Darnold with you last week. Ryan Fitzpatrick, little Fitzmagic going on.
I know. He's been good. It's a combination of a few things. One, the defense is always, you know, terrible. So they're always playing from behind. So I think that, you know, that has certainly helped, Jay, part of it also. Devontae Parker. In his fifth year, he's emerging in his fifth year out of nowhere. You know, we didn't see, you know, most people didn't see that coming anywhere. And that's the, and then get this. Here's the schedule for the rest of the 3 weeks. The fantasy playoffs are this week, next week, and the week after. Jets, Giants, Bengals. Bang. Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to power people through the playoffs, and it starts this week against the Giants. He's, you know, you're going to. Here's the biggest mistake that teams make, fantasy owners make in the playoffs, Jay, is they go, well, I got to the playoffs. I got to go with the guys that got me here. Well, all right, you're going to start Drew Brees against San Francisco instead of Ryan Fitzpatrick against the Jets. Maybe that'll work out, but you got to at least think about all of the options that are on the table with, you know, to find the best possible scenario for your team. And that's a lot of guys don't do that.
Do yourself a favor. As we get off the phone, go to YouTube and search Fitzmagic and listen to that song. You'll thank me later. It's actually terrible.
All right, that's
but
my guy.
Yeah, but Fitzmagic, yeah, great song. But he did it back when he was with the Bills. Number two question for you here, Charge. The 49ers, and here's the thing, second leading rushing team in the NFL, and we're thinking changing of the guard. I mean, Mostert was unbelievable in that game against the Baltimore Ravens. And again, you look at the top 10 teams in the NFL, they're all playoff caliber teams. I mean, running the football is back in vogue. Do the 49ers have a problem at running back? Well, not a problem, but a good problem to have.
Yeah, I think we do have a changing of the guard. So, you know, Tevin Coleman was already trending the wrong direction with diminishing playing time for a month leading into last week's game. And then they just turned the reins over to Raheem Mostert against a terrific Ravens defense last week. And all he did was pile up 150 all-purpose yards on the Ravens defense. Now, you know, Kyle Shanahan is super mercurial with his running back rotation, and Matt Breida is coming back, and maybe he'll work his way into this too. But Mostert's been the best, most reliable back they've had, and it feels like he's going to have the first opportunity to succeed. He's big enough to get goal line work. He's the guy that I think fantasy owners want to be working towards. And and Tevin Coleman, I think that thing's pretty much run its course, and he's just not a special back. So yeah, I think Raheem Mostert's the guy now.
Not only are you a fantasy football guru, but you live in the beautiful city of Minneapolis. Adam Thielen, still not practicing. What's going on here?
Good Lord. 6-week hamstring injury. So, suffers the hamstring injury like week 7. We get fast forward to the Chiefs game, and he tries to come out. He makes it 5 plays, and that's it for him. Obviously had a setback on it. Then last week, coming out of the bye, when everybody thought Thielen would be back, they said that he had a, quote, scare on the hamstring, and they were holding him out. Well, it turns out I think the scare was another setback on it, and he gets re-injured it again, and I don't think Adam Thielen's going to go here. Now, with Thielen out, here's the fascinating part of this. Kyle Rudolph has become the highest-scoring fantasy tight end in the NFL. He scored 6 times in the 6 games that Thielen has missed. So Kyle Rudolph available in roughly half of leagues still. He's got Detroit this week, scored against Detroit last time they played. Kyle Rudolph is the big winner out of all of this.
Wasn't he the guy that played Duck, Duck, Goose? When you guys call it what do you guys call it up there? Was that him?
We correctly call it Duck, Duck, Gray Duck, which is what it's called. It's always been Duck, Duck,
no,
Gray Duck.
No.
And it's just the rest of the world decided that we don't like to put colors. We don't associate colors with ducks or whatever. So you guys changed it on us. It's Duck, Duck, Gray Duck. Yes, that's what we call it here. This thing migrated, this whole Duck, Duck, Gray Duck thing, it came from Scandinavia. And so when all of the beautiful blonde-haired Norwegians and Swedes came to Minnesota and they migrated over here as immigrants, they brought that with them, and then the rest of you guys all screwed it up.
And then they wear ties on the sideline at PJ Fleck. Tonight's game charge, the boys against the Bears, Dallas. And I have no idea what they're doing with Garrett, and I don't think anybody does. He must have pictures on Jerry Jones.
Jay, we know what they're doing with Garrett. They're playing out the string here. They love him. It's over.
Yeah. Zeke, been kind of a middling fantasy performer this year, charge going against a tough matchup here with the Bears.
Get this. We think of Ezekiel Elliott, who, by the way, he was a top 4 pick in the draft in virtually every league in America. Hasn't rushed for more than 86 yards in a month. Hasn't scored in 4 of his last 5 games. And really, the whole season has been a lot like this. Just one, and in a brutal matchup in Chicago. And Chicago's been a somewhat inconsistent run defense, but not at home. One running back has topped 59 rushing yards at Soldier Field in their last 17 games. One running back has topped 59 yards. It is a really tricky matchup. By the way, they don't throw to him much either. They did last week, but on the balance, they have not thrown to him like they used to either, which is another failing of Jason Garrett's, because he is a very good pass-catching back that they are underutilizing.
Charge, I got to ask you this. I was talking to Serta before the game, or before the show. We're talking fantasy football and in the Chiefs, man. You know, with LeSean McCoy, he's got the history against the Patriots, but they don't trust using him very much. Darwin Thompson finally got a look for the Chiefs. Darrell Williams now on the IR. He was kind of that trusted circle of trust guy for Andy Reid last week. They bring back Spencer Ware. I'm not expecting anything of him. Like, I know that you would not start a Chiefs running back, but if you had to, who would it be?
Well, if Damian Williams gets ruled out, then I'm really into Darwin Thompson and seeing what he can do. Because he was the best player on the field last week, and I don't think it was close. I don't think you could argue that. And LeSean McCoy brings nothing to the table. So I just got to figure out what's going to happen with Damian Williams. And if Damian Williams isn't active in this game, Darwin Thompson becomes, I think, very interesting. Granted, it's a very tough matchup. I don't like the matchup much. But nevertheless, I would love to see what he can do. And he's in a pinch. I think he's a guy you can start. But if Damian Williams is active, then all bets are off. For all I know, it could be, I think everybody could get some looks at that point. But, you know, injury sometimes just clarifies these situations for fantasy owners, Jay. And that this might be one of them.
Good stuff as always. Fanball.com. Paul Charchi, and he's a fantasy football Hall of Famer and an all-around funny guy who's going to be shoveling a lot of snow in Minneapolis here soon. Thanks, Charge.
Oh, it already started. What do you mean soon? This is, you know, if you think it's not the middle of winter already here in Minnesota, you are very mistaken.
Well, I know you've already. We've got a little bit, not as much as you, but you got a snowblower yet, Charge?
You get the ice, the sleet, the sneet. You're a big sneet city. You guys get a ton of sneet. That's your bit is the sneet. But then it's gone. Like an hour later, it's all over. You know, you lived it once. It was a nightmare when it happened. Nobody can drive in it, and then it's all over. Us, the snow that we're getting now will be the last stuff that gets done melting in late April.
Do you have a snowblower yet, Charge, or do you shovel it? I'm just curious.
So here's the deal. I'm glad you asked, Jay. I just moved. I moved into a new house. I was in one of these communities where they did all the lawn work for you because I'm a busy guy and it's football season. I don't have time for this. But
sure.
I decided to change houses, and then I had to make a decision: do I go electric or do I go traditional gas? So I decided to go electric, and so I got I got electric lawnmower, leaf blower, and snow blower, and it turns out. The mower's excellent. It's great. Everything's great. But the snow blower, if you get more than like 7-8 inches of snow, which we do regularly,
you need gas.
It dies. It can't do it. So I might have to actually have. I may actually have to handcuff my snow blower to a different snow blower so that I've got two of them. To use it as a fantasy term. I'll handcuff them together. My gas powered two stage to go with my. Oh, so precious battery-powered electric one.
Oh man! You know what's funny is a couple years ago, these neighbors I had, they were kind of older. They were retiring down to Florida, and they had a snowblower. And they just came over and said, "You want this?" And I said, "Well, hell yes!"
Wow!
Yeah, it's very nice, very nice. Yeah, I was like, "Hell yes, I'll take it." They didn't need it in Florida. Come on.
Do you ever use it? I mean, you know, how
I've used it before. Yeah,
where you are.
Well, you know, charge. I usually like the person that has one. You know, and you kind of like say, "Hey man, I'll give you a beer if you do this." You know. I like to do it myself. Mm-hmm. You know? Never have.
I don't know. I at that point, it's almost just a novelty to have a snowblower, right? You know, you got like an inch and a half of snow, and you're like, oh, hey, I'm the guy with the snowblower. Check this out.
Paul Charchi at fanball.com. Always like talking to Charch. Charchnado. See you later, Charch.
All right, bye-bye.
There you go, Charch. I called you that Sharknado was coming out. We used to join me out, so I called him Charchnado. Guys all over the place. Serta, you're a fantasy football guru. That's what you do. It's what you like. You're a man of many talents, but fantasy football is one of yours. Charch, man, I love listening to this guy, man. Were you geeking out back there on that stuff?
Yeah, Charch is one of
those
great.
Yeah, he's one of those guys.
He does a weekly fantasy football radio show.
That's right.
Very good.
That's right. And you can catch Stephen Serta, 9 a.m. on Sunday mornings. It's most listened to radio. Who to sit, who to start, who to surprise you this week. And, of course, the Out of Bounds or Forced Upon podcast with Dusty Likens. It comes out every Monday and Wednesday. Check that out, 610sports.com. Coming up next, saw a tweet today that was absolutely ridiculous from Pro Football Talk. Talk about it next.
Middays, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, 610 Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Jay Binkley, Stephen Serta with you here, 610 Sports Radio. Serta, did you have any idea what I was talking about with Charge? I probably should clarify this. It wasn't an inside joke, but when we were talking Duck, Duck, Goose, I mean, obviously we're not talking about a children's game. You know where this started, don't you? When he talked about Kyle Rudolph?
Yeah.
Okay. What happens was they had these end zone celebrations.
Yeah, you know? I remember the Vikings have good they have good team celebrations.
Oh, they do. The Vikings are really good at it. And when they first started being allowed to do this, they played a game where they all sat around, like the kids' game, Duck, Duck, Goose. That's what we call it here, right? Or at least I did. You called Duck, Duck, Goose?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we do. Well, Charge and the people in Minnesota, and this is why they're a little weird up there. And I don't know if it's all the snow or what, but they're just a little weird. They call it Duck, Duck, Gray Duck. Like Vikings fans are throwing a fit because Kyle Rudolph was playing Duck, Duck, Goose. Matter of fact, the Vikings thought it was Duck, Duck, Goose. But the people of Minneapolis, they're like putting cheese in the middle of those burgers and call them Lucy Juicy. Those are fantastic, by the way. But they call it Duck Duck Gray Duck. Never even heard of it, but that's what they called it. They were throwing a fit. They're like out there doing a celebration, calling it Goose, and they didn't heard about it. That's all I've ever called it. So, I mean, Kyle Rudolph is part of this, and they were throwing a fit. I'm like, what are you talking about? But anyway, that's if you're listening and you wondered why.
I don't think they should get upset about that. That seems ridiculous.
It does. But if you wondered what Charge and I were talking about, a children's game from fantasy football to that was because of that, because of Kyle Rudolph. We said Kyle Rudolph, that's what I thought about was Duck Duck, Gray Duck. I forgot text line, my bad. You asked me to ask about Kirk Cousins. Sorry I didn't do that, didn't remember it. But you know what? I got the next best thing, Steven Serta. Kirk Cousins, like him or not, this week.
I have to look at his matchup. I wasn't prepared to answer this question.
Okay.
Well, I don't have all the matchups memorized off the top of my head.
Lions versus Vikings.
Yeah, I would take Kirk Cousins in that game. It's a divisional matchup, which those tend to not necessarily go the way like the rankings and stuff like that generally go. But Kirk Cousins has already played the Vikings once this year. He had a really good game. And the Vikings secondary is super questionable. Like, outside of Darius Slay, they don't really have any playmakers. So I think Kirk Cousins is going to do just fine this week, even if Adam Thielen doesn't play.
Yeah, that's the thing. When is he coming back? I remember when it was questionable with the Chiefs. He played that game, didn't he? Like, one or two snaps against the Chiefs? I think that's what it was.
He came back from injury against the Chiefs and then re-injured his hamstring and left like in the first quarter of that game and hasn't played since.
Yeah, it was crazy. Sorry to put you on the spot, but my fantasy football guy was gone. And, well, that's you, sir. You're the fantasy football guy, and I know you haven't had time for your hours of research, which is actually what he does. This guy, Friday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, he gets in here at the crack of dawn on Sundays to give you the latest, and I give him a lot of credit for that. He puts a lot of work into that show. That's why it's so good.
Yeah, I can run through matchups all day. I just didn't have the full slate of games memorized and right in front of me.
Well, you didn't want to put your money where your mouth is. You know, you're calculated with this. You think about these things. You think about matchups. You think about who to start. You don't want to lead the people wrong. There's a lot of respect.
I would much rather start Kirk Cousins this week than, like, Dak Prescott. Although Dak Prescott's been a fantastic fantasy quarterback, it's just a tough matchup that I don't really love.
Yeah, there you go. From the 620, text line 69306. And it's weird how we get into weird conversations at times, but it is what you guys want to talk about, which I'm always willing to do that. Says, my in-laws are from Minnesota, and they take Duck, Duck, Gray Duck very seriously up there. Almost as serious as the Juicy Lucy's. No way, man. No way. We had on the former Missouri Tiger, Kentrell Brothers, one time. He's playing for the Vikings. I remember this a couple years ago in the playoffs, and he'd never had a Juicy Lucy. Like, he'd never had it. I mean, the Vikings, man, I guess they're just not with the flow. Just not with the flow. But there's no way they take that as seriously as the Juicy Lucy. That's like barbecue in Kansas City. Seriously. The Juicy Lucy is fantastic. I wish more people did these. There are places around the city that does them. If you ever had one, sir, you know what I'm talking about? You take the meat. I'm not a cook, but I like.
I've made them.
You put the cheese in it.
I've made them at home. There, I mean.
You can make a Juicy Lucy.
Yeah, it's not that hard to make. I'm sure the place that started them, I'm sure they're fantastic burgers. I've never been there. I've never tried them. But I'm a pretty good cook. I have made them at home before, and they turn out just fine.
I bet Likens can do it, too. He's always tweeting pictures of his food he makes. One time, this is ridiculous. Well, I like to grill. I can't cook worth the crap, honestly. I eat, like, frozen pizza and burritos. That's what I call cooking or ordering from Jimmy John's. I consider that, you know, being a chef. But I can grill. I can grill. I mean, what dude can't grill? And I get out there. I take it very seriously. The onions, the meat, whatever. I mean, I made a Bloody Mary chicken one time where I took the chicken and, like, basically put it in a Ziploc, just like I make a Bloody Mary. Talking vodka, talking Worcestershire, talking the celery salt. You throw it in there, and it was fantastic. So I saw this Juicy Lucy thing, and I thought, why not put Doritos? Like, crunch up Doritos and put them on the burger, right? But my dumbass grilled them with it on there, and they burnt. Like, the Doritos burnt. I should have done it at the end, which is a lot better. I mean, I put them on there, and they kind of, you know, melted themselves into the burger. and it tasted like crap. But, you know, it's just experimenting with things, trying things out, and, you know, I like those shows. I'm like Andy Reid, that Diners, Drives, and Dives he was just in. I do recommend you going out to that. I talked about that tweet from Pro Football Talk, and I don't know why I assume it's Florio doing this. I have absolutely nothing to base this on whatsoever, but I continue to have a weird feeling that Andrew Luck could be the week one 2020 starting quarterback of the Las Vegas Raiders. No way, no how, unless the Raiders want to give the Colts $25 million, it ain't happening. Don't forget, the Colts were nice to Andrew Luck. Nice to him. Never forget that. You know, that was one of the biggest shocks in the NFL. It really was. When he, like, all of a sudden retired and people are talking about it and the stadium knew about it. And here's the comeback player of the year, someone I thought in the AFC grand scheme of things, you're thinking, you know, the Colts are going to be there because Chris Ballard is so good at his job and what he's done, that Andrew Luck was what they need. You know, he's the missing ingredient. I still think he is. But Andrew Luck, they paid him. They owed him $25 million. They paid him. Like, they didn't have to pay him. They did it out of the kindness of their heart. Listen, I get it, man. Your friend's down on his luck or something, and they give you $20. You love that. $25 million just to be nice? Nice is sort of going to the company kitchen that's like the vending machine here and buying me a Dr. Pepper. That's what I consider nice. $25 million. Andrew Luck will never play again. Do you think he plays again? I bet he loves waking up, being able to move his neck, being able to move his body, you know, do those type of things. He's not playing again.
I don't think that it's the same with him like it is with Rob Gronkowski. Like, I'm not just going to completely rule him out. I don't think Gronk is ever going to play again. I understand Andrew Luck had some injuries, but, like, Gronk was having back surgery after back surgery after back surgery. Gronk had a brutal knee injury where he just shredded, like, everything in his knee. Like, Andrew Luck has had serious injuries, obviously, that have affected his playing career, and he said he was in a lot of pain. But Andrew Luck also isn't nearly as accomplished a football player as Rob Gronkowski is. Like, Gronk had all the money, got the rings. It's perfectly acceptable for him to just get out because he's going to have a really successful career post-football. Andrew Luck can come back and still be one of the highest-paid quarterbacks in the NFL, and he could step right into, in my opinion, a team that would be, if he were the quarterback this season, a team that would be right at the top of the AFC, looking like it's one of the best teams in football.
It's so hard to find that guy in the NFL, and he was the guy. You know, great year. He was the best quarterback not to win a Super Bowl. I've always considered Rivers that guy, the best QB to not have won one. But Luck had got there. I mean, look at the guy he started. I mean, winning playoff games, coming back against the Kansas City Chiefs as a young quarterback, having that poise that he had. Like, that was a serious kick in the crotch to the Colts when he left. And I get it why. I mean, you know, it's not for everybody. And he's definitely been dealing with injuries, crazy injuries. Never even thought – I didn't even think he'd play football last year the way he was going. I remember when he was throwing some footballs and people were showing on Twitter and laughing at him because he could barely throw it, but we're kind of understanding what he was going through. It was a struggle for him even to throw a forward pass. And then the way he came back, comeback player of the year – it was fantastic. It's like they had their guy. You know, Chris Ballard, who I think, you know, there's a chance he could have been GM in Kansas City. What an all-star state. When you think about it, Dorsey, Veach, and Chris Ballard all together, it was insane. If there's anything that's been rated, it's not been the coaching staff with the Chiefs, it's been the front office. People want a little bit of what Kansas City's doing. But Chris Ballard's doing a great job. He flipped that line, drafted Quentin Nelson, the best offensive lineman in the NFL. One of the best we've seen in a while, to be quite honest with you. I don't think that's an exaggeration. I love the way the guy plays the game. Brings in Braden Smith, local product, the late the South. Flipped it from the most sacks to the fewest sacks in 1 year. Like, Andrew Luck was the guy. I mean, it's so hard to find the quarterback. That's what teams are doing. They're looking for the next Mahomes. Teams missed on Lamar Jackson by drafting him when he went into the first round of the Ravens. Missed on that guy, which was dumb. I mean, even an amateur, you know, like myself sitting here going, hey, him and Mayfield are the best quarterbacks in that draft, Lamar Jackson, to be quite honest with you, better than Baker Mayfield right now. I think Mayfield had a good year last year, but Lamar Jackson's redefining the position. And that is interesting. Someone asked me the other day, because we were talking about running backs, and could the art of the running back come back in the NFL? Teams are running more effectively than they have in the past. Getting the top 10 teams in rushing in the NFL, playoff caliber teams. They run the ball well. Colts are right up there, too. And who knows what their season's going to end up. But they're right up there, too. Frank Reich likes running the football. But the quarterback position is interesting. Because I remember when Sam Bradford came to the NFL, and it was all about, could he take that Oklahoma spread offense and be an NFL quarterback? Could he get under center? Remember Tim Tebow? All the work they were doing with him instead of being from the shotgun? College football has just infiltrated the NFL. It's been the end-all be-all. Kyler Murray is not drafted as the first pick in the NFL draft 10 years ago. It's just not happening. Everybody wanted 6'4", 230, 240-pound quarterbacks. That was the direction they were going.
I think that analytics and the integration of analytics into the modern-day NFL has a lot to do with that. Like, certain franchises aren't drafting Kyler Murray number one overall. Like, if the Carolina Panthers, which, you know, their owner, David Tepper, basically said that he fired Ron Rivera because Ron Rivera is set in his own way.
Well, he's a mini Newton.
And Ron Rivera is a good head football coach, in my opinion. I think he's going to get another job very quick. But Ron Rivera is very open that he does not use analytics. They don't have an analytics department. He's not interested in using analytics. When you're seeing the best franchises across the NFL right now and the ones that look like they're setting themselves up for the future for sustained success are the ones that have massive analytics departments where they're building teams in different ways. And, you know, even John Dorsey pays attention to analytics.
And he was like the last guy to do that too.
Yeah, and even John Dorsey has analytics people now in Cleveland, and he's revered as one of the better draft strategists that's in the game.
But it's funny you say that, Steven, because I remember when he went to Cleveland, and I was curious because Cleveland is such an analytical team, and John Dorsey's not. Like, I remember those draft things that Dorsey held. It wasn't computerized with him. It was filing cabinet. You know? I wouldn't be shocked if he had a flip phone. That surprised me that Dorsey bought into analytics. But if he bought into them, sir, to anybody would. But Cleveland relies heavily on that. John Harbaugh uses analytics all the time. Aren't the Ravens pretty much the most analytical team in football?
Yes, and that's why the Ravens should be the model for what a modern-day NFL organization should be. And the Patriots say they don't use analytics at all. I don't think that that's true.
No.
I think that they do. I think maybe they don't use the type of formulas and algorithms and stuff that everybody else are using, but they're using some type of formula. They have somebody there who's tracking trends and things like that. That's the only way they could be ahead of everything, like the way they constantly are. They're constantly ahead of everybody else in that regard. But the Ravens, in my opinion, are the modern organization that every team in the NFL should be trying to model themselves after, because just a couple of years ago, even last year, before they moved to Lamar Jackson, when they still had Joe Flacco, people were talking about John Harbaugh getting fired and the Ravens needing to move on from him. And they didn't do that. They took this quarterback that everybody said should move to wide receiver, and they completely changed their offense in the middle of the season. And they completely tailor-made it to him. And then they spent an entire offseason figuring out how to make it even better and implementing all of the numbers into their coaching and into their strategy. Like, it makes all the sense in the world, but no other team is doing it like that, where they're going full-blown analytics to make all of their decisions for them.
And you know where we're going? We're going to the art of going for two more often. You know, Tomlin's been ahead of the curve on that. When to do that? Does it make more sense to do it? Score points. You're seeing this. Remember the Ravens when they won the go for two against the Chiefs? Because they understood, you know, analytically, you got to put up points against the Kansas City Chiefs or you're not going to beat them. I mean, that's exactly what they were doing. Harbaugh's got a guy in his headset with the analytics. There's an article out, Serta. I got to find it for you. It's from 2016. This is a fascinating read. ESPN did it. And they looked at the four majors. Looked at the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NHL. and they put every team where they sat with the analytics. And it's funny, like they did all in, listening, and not in at all. And the ones that weren't in it at all weren't good teams. I mean, you look at some of the most analytical teams in professional sports, they win. There was this big pushback that analytics don't work in baseball. It's all that works. You know, I'll never forget when Dave Cameron, who called Eric Hosmer the biggest landmine in free agency, ended up in San Diego after he was hired to start an analytics department. They brought in Hosmer, and I kind of wondered, well, how did that work? Guy called him one of the biggest landmines in free agency. And they got Dave Cameron from Fangraphs to run their analytics department. You know, for years, people thought that the Royals were old school. Ned Yost doesn't do it because I get it. Lineup construction is a big part of analytics, how you construct the lineup and what you do. And Ned went by feel, too. He's one of those managers that went by feel. But the Royals are very analytical in what they do. I mean, they've got Yale and MIT guys walking. I mean, there's a bunch of smart dudes with the Kansas City Royals. It's how they built that team with the budget they had. It was analytical. All those guys that were brought in here were brought in for different reasons. You know, they were swing guys, not strikeout. Everybody that was brought in here was for defensive metrics and offensive metrics. Maybe not the style and Ned Yost lineup, but a lot of what the Royals were doing was analytics. And John Sherman, the new owner of the Kansas City Royals, is a strong believer in analytics. And this whole thing with the opener, when the race started this, people looked at it like they were crazy with the openers. Total analytic move. We just need 27 outs. You know, I remember Dayton Moore's end of the season press conference in 2017, and I asked him that question, or somebody did. I don't remember if it was me or not. I forget things a lot. And someone asked him, and he said, we just need 27 outs. And the Royals tried this with Kyle Zimmer, and I think they're moving that direction. Heck, in 2017, and we didn't see it as much this year in the MLB playoffs, excuse me, in 2018, we saw a lot of teams using that opener going analytics. The Astros, say they cheat or not with banging on the trash can of the dugout, but they're a heavy analytics team. So are the Red Sox. So are the Dodgers. And they're always good. The Dodgers are always there. They're a heavy analytics team. In the NBA, the most analytical team is always considered the San Antonio Spurs. And look at the championships that Pop's been able to put there. The Blackhawks in the NHL won 3 Stanley Cups. The Blackhawks are one of the most analytical teams in the NHL. But this thing is fascinating. And keep in mind, Harbaugh, a former Andy Reid disciple. You know, here's the thing about Ron Rivera, since you bring him up. You know, he worked for Andy Reid. He was a linebackers coach in Philadelphia. He was there as soon as Andy took over. Ron Rivera was one of his first hires. If Bob Sutton was still here, be banging on the drum for the Chiefs to hire Ron Rivera as defensive coordinator. Now, I think he'll be a head coach in this league. But you're telling me you wouldn't go get Ron Rivera as your defensive coordinator? Of course you would. But as far as the spread of analytics, Cliff Kingsbury can thank being in the NFL because of that. Because he was going to go to USC. I was always an advocate for the Chiefs hiring Kingsbury. Andy Reid uses a lot of Texas Tech principles. Matter of fact, last year on a Thursday night, TCU and Gary Patterson played Texas Tech. And Gary Patterson studied Andy Reid. I remember the Dallas Morning News had a story on it. Or maybe it's the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Can't remember. But anyway, they wrote a story on Gary Patterson watching Chiefs films for RPOs, how the Chiefs were running the RPOs because Andy Reid got it from Texas Tech. And I haven't seen a lot of NFL coaches go that direction as far as what made you work. And I think Harbaugh has taken principles of what made Lamar Jackson such a special college athlete. He really was. Only quarterback ever to have 3,000 yards, 2 straight years, and 1,000-yard rushing in either one of them. Just saw Jalen Hurts do that at Oklahoma. But they tailor-made their offense on the strengths of RG3. Now, it's dangerous to do because you have to switch things up if your backup can't do it. That's why I was kind of worried about Matt Moore. You know, it's been a long time since he came out of Oregon State. You know, kind of before RPOs were prevalent in college football. But what made him work? What made him have success? What beat defenses? And I feel Andy Reid's done a good job of implementing a lot of what Texas Tech does, so much so that Gary Patterson, great mind as a college football coach, studied the Kansas City Chiefs to get ready for Texas Tech on a Thursday night. I found that interesting. Like, I would love to sit down and talk to Andy Reid, how things have changed, like how offenses have changed to where college football used to copy off the NFL. Or you'd see the spread offense just with teams like Louisiana Tech and Tim Mertay and Troy Edwards, all the numbers they put up, because that was the only way a school like that could compete against the big boys, to spread things out, use all the corners of real estate that you can, spread offenses, and now you've seen more of it to the NFL. These college coaches go visit the NFL. They go visit each other. Like Nick Saban and Alabama host different coaches from the NFL, college football, whatever. Coaches always want to know what the other coach is doing for success. Football is one of the biggest copycat sports that we have. What's working in college? What's trying in the NFL? I just think we're seeing such an open mind in football and how we do things. It used to be the shotgun, and then all of a sudden Chris Ault in Nevada started using the pistol, you know, 3 yards instead of the 5 yards for shotgun. You know, the angles, it was all about the angles. The angles for the quarterback to run the football off tackle was that pistol. And they brought in Chris Ault, you might remember, as a consultant. And he could have worked for any other team. But then the next year, the Chiefs made an exclusive deal with Chris Ault to run that pistol offense. We saw that in the NFL. We continue to see that. We saw the Wildcat work at Arkansas. And then we saw it implemented in the National Football League. And we saw teams figure it out. We saw the rise of the run and shoot with Jack Pardee at the University of Houston that went to the Houston Oilers. And then we saw that transition to the NFL where we now have five wide. And then you have Andy Reid that still goes back to 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends, two wide receivers. Football is ever-changing. It's amazing what you can do with this game if you're a good head coach within the rules to change it up and be different. And I will credit Andy Reid for that. He makes things different. That's why this offense has always been so damn good. Coming up next, we'll check in with Pete Sweeney, live from Arrowhead Stadium, the editor-in-chief, arrowheadpride.com. What's going on with the injury situations? We'll talk to him next.
Middays, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, 610 Sports Radio.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.